This is the Medicast, September 6th, 2010.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the Medicast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Podmedic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. We have a lot of exciting things going on this week, so I'll jump right on into it. First off, I want to welcome all of the brand new listeners to the show, so welcome. If you haven't, maybe you're checking out the video version of the show over on the website or found the video version in iTunes. There's also an audio version that you can download an MP3 file as well. So however you're catching the show as a listener or a viewer, definitely want to welcome you to the show. Of course, you'll find a lot more information, tools, and tips for EMS students and providers, as well as show notes links for all the things discussed in each of the episodes and subscription links on how to subscribe and get signed up for the show, all available over at the Medicast website. And that's medicast.com/blog. So head over there and check out the Medicast blog. You'll find links there. You can leave comments on any of the articles and show notes links that you find there. And it's a great way for you to stay up to date with what's going on in the EMS community using the Medicast blog. Also, I want to encourage you to get back in touch with me. So if you haven't already done so and you'd like to share a comment or had a thought about an upcoming episode you'd like to see, maybe I've made a mistake and you need me to issue a correction, whatever the case may be, this is a community effort here and I look forward to hearing from each and every one of you. You can shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. You can also send me a voicemail, Our long-term listener, Heath, has checked in this week, and he's actually called in on the voicemail line in addition to sending an email, and Heath was checking in with some interesting stuff coming up here in the listener mail segment. You can call in on that voicemail line yourself, and I encourage you to do so, 941-306-3342. So that's easy. Put it in your phone. And when you're listening to the show and it's safe to do so, call in and share a thought or a comment about what you're listening to. Also, that's also can be 94130-MEDIC, so if you need a way to remember it, that's another way. Of course, don't forget to leave comments on the site and get back in touch with me, and also follow up on the other great programs available in the ProMed Network, which the Medicast is a member of. ProMedNetwork.com has tons of EMS shows on it, plus shows by other healthcare and medical professionals. And if you want to expand your knowledge and find out what's going on in the medical community as well as the EMS community, you can find a lot of good information and great podcasts, just like the Medicast, over at ProMedNetwork.com. So definitely check that out. I want to thank, first off and foremost, Zoll for sponsoring our upcoming trip to EMS Expo. They're actually going to be sponsoring the EMS Expo Zoll Podcast Studio. That's right, we're going to have a Zoll Podcast Studio where we're going to be recording shows live from the exhibit hall floor in Dallas. So if you are going to be in Dallas for EMS Expo and you haven't already got your exhibit hall pass and you'd like, or maybe you're in the area and like to stop in, I can get you a couple, I have a limited number of free exhibit hall passes. So you'll want to get in touch with me by email, podmedic@mac.com, and make sure you let me know you'd like to get those. A couple people have already done so, and if you haven't heard back from me in a week or so, please send me an email reminder because it's just crazy busy as I get ready to head to Expo, and I will tell you how to get in touch with getting those exhibit hall passes directly. So in the meantime, definitely come by and see us in the exhibit hall there in the Zoll Podcast Studio where you can stop by, listen to the show that's going on. We're going to be doing 3 or 4 shows a day. Chris Montero from the EMS Garage is going to be there. We've got Natalie Quibido and Jeremiah Bush from the Gen Med Show are going to be there producing their program. And also Greg Fries from the EMS Educast. Plus, we might have some other new shows and some intriguing other things going on. 3 or 4 shows a day at the Expo, plus our great finale episode on Friday morning, where we actually do our best of show kind of review, talk about everything from the best new ideas we've seen and trends we've seen in EMS at the EMS Expo, but also best swag. So who's giving away the good stuff? You'll find all of that listed there. And of course, those episodes are going to be put out in the shows. So, you know, if I'm recording a Medicast episode there, it will come out here on the Medicast feed. And we're videotaping as well, so it'll be a full video segment for you to check out too if you're a watcher of the show. So again, get in touch with me, podmedic@mac.com, if you'd like to find out more about how to get free exhibit hall passes for the conference. And I look forward to hearing from you and meeting as many of you as possible. So please come by the booth, wait to catch up with me if I'm in the middle of recording. We're going to be, each show is going to run about an hour, 45 minutes to an hour, but you know, wait till we're done and then just don't hesitate. Come up and meet me and get a chance to for me to meet you. So it's just really important. I do this show for you and I'm just another paramedic. I just want to learn more and improve my patient care and improve my abilities. And I hopefully, along the way, am sharing some of that improvement with you. So let's jump on into our listener email and voicemail segment. And I'm going to start off with an email from listener Scott. Scott was checking in. He loves the videos. And of course, I do a short video segment every Friday called the Medicast TV Weekly Commentary. Just a short little segment with whatever's on my mind. It might be a tip. It might be a study aid. It might be a link. Whatever just kind of occurs to me. What's going on in EMS? It might be just me ranting about something. And you can tell me I'm an idiot. And so, you know, but you got to watch it to find out if I'm an idiot or not. Unless, of course, you're married to me and maybe you already know. And my wife sometimes watches the show. So, hi, how you doing? Anyway, Scott was checking in and he loves the video and wanted to know, hey, can I share these videos? If you find the video, if you subscribe to the YouTube channel for the show or one of the other video sites, can you share that? Well, absolutely. All I ask is a couple of things. You have to use the segment in its entirety. So if you want to share the video segment, if you want to share a portion of this episode with someone, get in touch with me directly and say, hey, I want to share a portion of your tip segment from 2 weeks ago with my EMT class. You know, no problem at all. Just let me know, and I encourage you to do that and use these tools. If I come up with something that you find useful in some way, hey, great. You know, that's even better. Just let me know you're doing it, and also share the show with those individuals. So if you're doing it on a website, make sure you provide a link back to that episode page or at least to medicast.com/blog. Any way you can support the show, that's a great way to support it. Put links to the Medicast anywhere you want, okay? I really don't mind. If you're on a forum somewhere and you think that's something we've talked about that would be of value to the forum members and you want to share it with them, sure, share a link to the show anywhere you want, or put a video link up in the show, or use the embedding code that you'll find at the end of the videos so you can embed that right into your post. Any way you can, I'd love for you to share the show. So, Scott, thanks for asking that question. I guess I haven't addressed that, but certainly I encourage you. The one stipulation is that you have to use the whole show in its entirety. You can't break it up into little bits and pieces because I don't want something I said being taken out of context and used improperly so that someone makes a mistake. Not to say that I'm perfect and that I don't occasionally make mistakes in what I say on here, but we do try to correct those things. And if they don't listen to the whole show, they may not get the whole picture of what we're talking about. And if you want to use just a single segment, just let me know, and you know, I'll give you permission. I'm not trying to hold on to anything here. I just want to know, you know, where people are sharing it. Thanks, Scott. I appreciate that. Let's look on into another email I got from a listener. Listener Lawrence was checking in on one of my regular emails that gets sent out by the newsletter with links to the Medicast articles that I send out a couple times a month in addition to the weekly newsletter. And said one of the links wasn't working properly, so I'm going to find out why that is. You know, as Lawrence has done, I urge you to do. What you see is what you get, and good or bad. I am the Medicast. I have a couple of people occasionally helping me. My son helps out a little bit. But really, I do most of the stuff here all by myself, and it is incumbent upon you, a member of this community, to let me know if something's broken. If a link doesn't work, well, that doesn't do anybody any good. So send me a link to that page on the site so that I can go and fix the link or find out why the link isn't working. If your email you got isn't doing what it needs to do, you can do that as well. So Lawrence, thanks a lot. You know, this is a community effort. I say it all the time, but I really do mean it. And I appreciate you taking care of helping me figure out there's a problem there. I will find out why that link is not working properly in the newsletter. Some of you may notice that the link in the newsletter goes first to a thing called aweber.com. They actually are, that's the company I use to handle my newsletter and send it out to make sure people get it in a timely fashion. They track those links. So, you know, it's still a link to my blog, but it kind of goes by in waves at them so that I can see how many people are clicking on those links. It kind of just helps track that for me. So if you've seen that in the past and wondered what that was and if it was safe to go there, it is. It's how I keep track of what people are interested in here on the show so I can give you more of what you want to see. Listener Heath was checking in, and this is his voicemail. Again, 941-306-3342 is the voicemail number. And let's find out what Heath had to check in about, because he handles event EMS and security. So he's actually out there covering concerts, festivals, and things like that. A unique aspect of EMS care. So he runs into a lot of odd things, including a lot of current trends in drug abuse and illegal and illicit activities. And he always has some good things about protecting us and helps me keep my focus on scene safety and BSI. And in this particular segment, he's talking about that as well. Let's see what Heath had to share on the voicemail line.
Hello, Jamie. This is Heath Scarborough from Muskegon, Michigan. I'm actually now Kalamazoo, Michigan. Sorry I haven't been able to listen to the show lately. I had a technical difficulties with my laptop, hand sanitizer in the ambulance, and laptops don't mix.
Ooh.
But I'm calling today in regards to a special event that I worked a few weeks ago, and I'm finding another dangerous trend that is out there, especially at the rock concert or even everyday street experience. I came across it once last year at the Rothbury Music Festival, where concert goers are putting LSD in the squirt guns.
Whoa.
Now, this recent event, I had a concert goer spray a patient of mine with a squirt gun. Hmm. Unbeknownst to me at the time and the patient, that this was called pranking. And the patient was pranked by, obviously, this concert goer with the LSD. Post-call, after he found out the guy was, in fact, tripping out on acid, the same girl came back up and tried spraying me later that night.
Hmm.
She had sprayed me twice in the chest with the squirt gun. Fortunately, I was wearing body armor, and it did not soak through my soak past my uniform shirt. She then raised the squirt gun and screamed in the eyes, and I was close enough to actually disarm her using my flashlight. I broke the squirt gun and was able to take it away from her. I fortunately was on another call and was already gloved up to actually deal with the situation at hand. But I mention this because we've had a recent issue in South Michigan where I'm now an EMT and a psychiatric worker. One patient came into my facility on an LSD exposure unbeknownst to the patient. I've also had a second issue where another EMT was sprayed directly in the eyes. I do not know the outcome of that call, but I do know that the EMT was taken off of out of service immediately.
Yeah.
And the concert goer did advise the EMT that he had just been sprayed with LSD. We're now seeing this now, the college town that I live in, we're seeing this now in the college towns as kind of a prank. And it's out there. I normally used to tell my students when I spoke at classes to be aware of this at concerts, especially at nights where it seems to happen a lot. I wear safety glasses because I am on an ATV at night, but I'm now advising my students that even at night, part of BSI, especially with you saying it at the end of your show, instead of taking your glasses off at the end of the call, when you're out in the crowd, it's a good idea to keep it on.
Absolutely.
This isn't only because of the LSD threat that we're having, but also flying debris bottles, cross-contamination from that. But I figured I'd bring this up to you in the show, and also maybe you can pass it on to your listeners.
Yeah, I definitely will, Heath. And thanks a lot for calling in, taking the time. I know you also sent me an email to check in as well. And just, you know, this is the kind of thing. This is when I say this is a community effort, this is exactly what I'm talking about, because this is not something I've heard about before. And Heath mentioning this is, you know, means that this is probably not just happening in his region. This is happening in other places as well. And it's something to be aware of. If you're seeing this in a community, in your community, if you're in a college town, if you have festivals and rock concerts where you are, whatever the case may be, certainly you need to provide adequate protection for yourself and be suspicious of anybody who sprays you with anything, whether it's a squirt gun or whatever. You know, just don't even assume that it's just an innocuous fluid. You may have some issues to deal with there. So protect yourself. I think it's a good idea what he said about just making it a habit to wear safety glasses all the time when you're out in a setting like that, keeping your gloves on or with you. And clearly he wears body armor as well to protect himself. But it's certainly something to keep in mind when you're in that type of a setting. And this is very, very alarming and unusual. And I'm going to actually touch base with Lisa Booz about this. Maybe we can have Lisa come on and talk a little bit about LSD and what her, what she's seen about this, because you'd certainly want to involve your poison center if you had a suspected exposure like this. And it's not the typical LSD exposure where you have a patient who is a user of illicit drugs. They have an accidental exposure like this because of something like a prank. It's a bad thing. So he thanks a lot. I, you know, again, can't stress enough. I need you, the listeners, to tell me what's going on out there. And when you have a specialized situation like Heath does, Heath constantly checks in a couple times a year at least, sometimes more frequently, when he runs into something in his community, something he's seen. Maybe he has a question for me. Most often it's a tip and an update on what's going on, and certainly very frightening. So I would urge you to check this out. And, you know, I'll have to try to see if I can put some links together maybe in a future episode to address this particular problem. Again, don't forget you can get back in touch with me yourself. Call in on the voicemail line like Heath did, 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC, or send me an email, podmedic@mac.com, and I will get back to you. I respond to every email I get, and if you send a voicemail in and it's just a general question and I don't put it on the show, I will respond back to you via email. So make sure you put your email address at the end of any call that you put in. Don't worry, I'll trim it off. You didn't hear Heath's, and that's because I cut it off at the end of his comments before he gave his email address. So if you want to get me to get back in touch with you directly and send me an email as well, in case I need clarification before I put your comment on the show. So let's jump on into this week's news, and I'm going to lead off with the first story on my screen over here, looking at bed bugs. Now, maybe I've talked about this in the past. There seems to be a big prevalence and increase in the number of reported sightings of bed bugs. These creatures come out only at night. They are very small. They can hide in the tiniest cracks, and they don't come out every night. They only come out when they need to feed. That's right. They bite us, get a little bit of blood, and then go back and hide in their hole. They don't. They tend not to hitch a ride on us unless, of course, we happen to jump up while they're on board, and then they hold on until we get somewhere where they can jump off. So, they're pesky. They're annoying. They give everybody the heebie-jeebies. Some people out there listening to this or watching this might actually be scratching right now just hearing about it. But it's something that's been reported, and I found an article in the New York Times entitled "They Crawl, They Bite, They Baffle Scientists." These are the international arthropods of mystery. A lot of people don't understand bed bugs, and of course they're very hard to get rid of. If I talked to a professional in the pest control area recently, I talked to somebody and he said, no, it's just hard to get rid of them. You have to open all the cabinets and drawers up. They need to seal off the room. The bedding and stuff like that needs to be removed. All these things need to be done, and then they have to seal it up and fumigate it for a long period of time, like a day. So you know, if it's a hospital room, that's a problem. If it's the back of your ambulance, that's a problem. So is this something that we're seeing an increased problem with? I wonder if anyone else has seen this crop up in a patient or after they've transported some patients and found bed bugs in their ambulance. Is this something you think that you need to worry about necessarily? They haven't been transmitting any kind of diseases, so they're not a disease vector, which is probably why the CDC hasn't started treating them like mosquitoes and other noxious pests. But they certainly are bed bugs giving us the heebie-jeebies. I mean, you know, we send people off to bed and, hey, don't let the bed bugs bite. But apparently we can't do that as nonchalantly anymore. So I'd look forward to hearing back from you. Again, email me, podmedic@mac.com, or leave a comment over on the article for this particular episode's show notes, and let me know what's going on with bed bugs in your service. Next up is looking at a frail elderly patient. This is an article out of the UK looking at, and this is a very alarming article, and I think it's a sensationalist article in a tabloid that might be not the best journalist, but certainly there's some study behind it, and I wanted to talk about it from an EMS perspective. Frail elderly patients left to starve in hospitals, that talking about general malnutrition of elderly patients, and that when they come into the hospital facilities, many of them enter malnourished, and even more of them leave with some level of malnutrition. What does this have to do with the EMS sector? Well, this is what it has to do with the EMS sector. One of the things we need to be doing more of is really checking on our patients' total health picture when we pick them up. We don't need to just focus on their single problem at hand, because it'll just, especially for elderly patients that we might pick up frequently, if they've got a problem and we don't find a way to help fix that problem, we're just going to be back there again in a day or two. So this comes under that community paramedicine shift in how we think about our patient care, but it doesn't require you to get any more additional huge amounts of knowledge. But while you're at a patient's home, if it's an elderly patient, you can ask them some basic questions along with your normal assessment. You know, hey, you know, how are you eating? When's the last time you had a good meal? Just so we can check on that. If they, you know, let them know you're going to do it, but pop open their refrigerator, see what their grocery situation is. You want to do this carefully and appropriately, but you may be able to help that person be referred to a service in your community, something like Meals on Wheels, or social services, bring in maybe a nursing home care aide to come in maybe once a day to prepare a meal or help with chores around the home. These things can do a lot to help this elderly person continue to live independently in their home, and also alleviate additional health care costs and things involved with ambulance transports, hospital stays, ER visits, all of that, simply because you took a little initiative and passed on the word that this patient wasn't eating well at home and needed some assistance. And that way, the hospital can pass that along to their discharge social worker and nurses, and hopefully they can help hook them up with services once they get back out into the community. Finally, our last story. Really great article I found over at irinnews.org. And this is a look at a day in the life of a Mogadishu paramedic. So this is in Somalia. And many of you probably don't know Mogadishu except from watching the movie Black Hawk Down. But, you know, while there was a lot of things about the indigenous population and how they view what we do, they're just normal people for the most part. You know, it's not the entire population, just a segment of the population that's involved with activities that are considered unlawful. Everybody else is just trying to get through their lives and get through their day, including paramedics in Mogadishu and ambulance services. So if you're interested in finding out what's going on around the world in different EMS services where they use different tools and different running methods and styles, check out this article on the day in the life of an ambulance service. This is Lifeline Africa Ambulance Service, launched in December 2008 when they realized that trauma cases were dying from blood loss well before they got to the hospital. Now, 18 months later, they are continuing to grow their service, coping as continued fighting happens in and around the capital, just trying to provide basic care and service to their members of their community, just like the rest of us. So check this article out. It's something a little different, and And I love seeing articles like this because I think it's important, just like they have stressed in the Chronicles of EMS project, that we need to know a lot more about how each of us in our different areas solve some of the problems we run into and how we run our services. And that is true internationally as well as just the, you know, the station next door. So definitely check out this article. And again, you'll find links to everything in these show notes over at medicast.com/blog. And I would urge you to follow up and check out this particular article and all the other articles over there. Time now for this week's tip and trick of the week. And I want to remind all the students out there that are checking out the show that many of these tips and tricks get separated out as individual standalone video, audio, and PDF file segments and added to the Medicast Extra. So if you haven't checked out the Medicast Extra and its complete line of study aids and tools that are available for the EMS student, I urge you to do so. You can also find more study tools and information over at MedicCastStore.com as well. So check out those resources. Let's go ahead and check on the topic this week, and we're going to be looking at pediatric ventilatory management and in this particular episode of the MedicCast. I got an email from listener Annie. Annie was checking in. She had bought a copy of my NREMT skills session for ALS providers that has been made probably almost 4 years ago now. And she found that there was a mistake. And so we're doing this, we're fixing it right away because apparently the National Registry had changed part of that skills sheet for the pediatric ventilatory management and updated some of the ventilation rates and other items. And so she wanted to make sure that people on the show were aware of it, and I apologize profusely to her. So if you've bought a copy of that a couple of years ago, I'm going to be making a new version here this fall at some point. But in the meantime, we're going to put this out there. And of course, I know the bleeding control has already changed, and that bleeding control, hemorrhage management, actually there's a segment over at medicast.com/skills. So if you head over to medicast.com/skills, you can actually download that bleeding control segment absolutely free. So it'll supplement if you already have the study tools. And if you don't, you get an idea of what kind of study aids there are for that I'm putting together for the National Registry people that are testing out there. So if you need help preparing for your skills exam for National Registry, these would be a good tool. And we're going to add this pediatric segment over there as well. So that'll be available. By the time you check this out, it should be up there. So let's talk a little bit about pediatric ventilatory management and the National Registry Station. So what are we talking about when we go to National Registry for our skills test in general anyway? Well, one of the things that you need to do is just have some basic preparation. How do you prepare for that skills test? And what do you need to do next? So let's talk a little bit about that. First off, practice, practice, practice. There is no substitute for practicing a skill over and over again and building that muscle memory. Muscle memory is important. It's how you drive and you get from point A to point B sometimes without consciously remembering every part of your trip because maybe you're talking to someone or you just were thinking about something while you drove. Your body knows how to drive. And I'm not saying we should be, you know, doing our hair, makeup, or texting while driving. Not a good thing. But it is a point that, you know, we can do general tasks. We can walk and talk without having to consciously think about it. And the same is true for any skill. So any kind of psychomotor skill where you're going to be using your muscles and body to do something, you can help with this. So practice is very important. So work on your skill by practicing on an airway intubation dummy. Make sure you're familiar with the different tools that are out there. Figure out what size laryngoscope blade you prefer, the size of oropharyngeal and nasopharyngeal airways that fit in your mannequin, because you may be testing in your own center and you'll actually know the mannequins. You'll know the tricks. So these are all things that are important, and you learn these things with practice. So notice and pay attention to what you're doing there. Also, visualize what you're doing. Visualization is important. We hear about athletes doing it all the time where, you know, they practice and they get their bodies ready to do something, but they also are out there then thinking about it. You can see them before a race or see them before a game or a match. you know, they're just kind of in the zone. You're kind of staring off into space. And sometimes I've seen skiers do this on the Olympics. You can actually see them at the top of the slope sometime if they show a picture of the person that's coming up next. And you can see them actually closing their eyes and they're shifting their body weight and thinking about the race, picturing themselves successfully navigating the course. Well, you can do that too. You can learn your skills by practice, practice, practice. And then when you're not able to practice, visualize yourself performing the skill. Think about the step-by-step process and see yourself doing each step. What this does is it actually cements the muscle memory to the actual memory in your mind of how to do something. And it makes it a much stronger connection. And there's been studies that have seen how this works in athletes. And there is absolutely no reason that can't work for anybody's muscle motor skills. It's no different running a race and performing a complex skill like catching a ball on the run and turning and throwing it past yourself to first base in an awkward fashion. You know, those skills of throwing that ball accurately from any position are developed over time. The same thing is true of intubation, then bag valve mask technique and things like that. So, you know, visualization is key. Make sure you get a hold of these SkillStation exam sheets. They're freely available PDF files. You can download them from the National Registry site. And actually, I have a link on that medicast.com/skills file where you can actually get those download links. Just go to that link and it'll take you right to the National Registry site. You can download all the skill sheets, whether it's BLS or ALS providers. They're all freely available there. And then you'll be able to see exactly what the person testing you is looking for. Perform those skills in that order, and you'll be much more prepared and much more likely to pass. Because let's face it, if they don't have to keep looking up and looking at different spots, if you're doing stuff right down the checklist, so all they're doing is check and check, and they're just giving you points all the way down the page, you're good to go. And you won't forget anything because you're going to learn it the way they expect to see it. Team up with other people. Take turns being the preceptor, being the person in the testing station. Take turns doing that and have you watch them go through it and check it off, and then have them watch you go through it and check it off. These are all very important, and it's a great way to stay up on your skills and practice and also get a sense of what it's like from both sides. You know what the preceptor's doing as well. It'll help you perform your skill. So what do you do when you get to the skill station? All right, so here we are. We're just kind of getting into the skill station. A lot of people get really bound up at skill stations. You know, you look at me and you go, oh, Jamie Davis, the pod medic, he's perfect. He does everything right. He's a great paramedic. Well, I like to think I'm a good paramedic and I provide great care, but I will tell you that I nearly threw up on my instructor at the skills test day. I just was a complete wreck. So you can be a wreck too. It's okay. But let's see if we can avoid some of the serious anxiety. A little bit of anxiety is good. It keeps you on edge, keeps you focused. But we don't want to get to the point where you just can't function. So take a deep breath. It's one of the most important things you can do, whether it's do this skill, whether it's out in the field and you've got a really critical patient. They're not going to die because you took a split second and took just a deep breath and settled yourself and refocused yourself on patient care. Look over the station as you enter. Familiarize yourself with it, especially if you're going to an unfamiliar place to test. If you're not testing in your school location, you'll need to go and familiarize yourself with what's there. Check the equipment. The preceptor will allow you a few minutes, not a ton of time, but a few minutes to look over the equipment, make sure it's in good working order. So that means put your laryngoscope blade together. So if you know what size blade you'd like to use for this station, and you know what nasopharyngeal and oropharyngeal airway sizes you might be using, you can go through and kind of pull those out, look at them, and then kind of put them in a place where you know they're going to be. Now, you can't just line them up in order. Preceptor's not going to let you do that. But you can pick the blade out you'd want to use, make sure the light comes on and that it's in good working order so that you are going to be ready to do the station, and then take it back apart. But you can lay it down in a place where you now know where it is. You can do the same thing with any of your supplies. And you should, and I encourage you to take a moment. First of all, it helps settle you down because nothing here is a surprise. You've used all these things before. Make sure your ET tubes are set to go and you're good. You're all squared away to intubate. Arrange your equipment. I talked a little bit about that. And then when you're ready, tell the instructor it's time to go. And they'll read you a prepared statement to help you know what's going on and the parameters under which they're operating. And you can be ready to take the skill station. When you're ready to go, let them know, and they will begin the process of testing you. So then we're going to step into exactly what that process is going to be like. So if you're listening to this or watching this, you can now step into the skill station and start visualizing yourself doing things as I go down the list. And I'm using the actual skill sheet list to do this. So when you are listening to this, this is the order in which things are going to be done in your skill station. First off, you need to advise that you're aware of scene safety and you're taking body substance isolation. Now, this can be either wearing gloves and having glasses or eyeglasses nearby, or just verbalizing that you are going to be ready, scene safety and BSI, and you're aware of the need for gloves and eye protection. So you've got that. Open the airway appropriately. That means in a pediatric infant patient, you're going to put the head in the neutral sniffing position. There'll be a pad there, or should be something there, to slide under the shoulder blades of the mannequin to raise the torso to the proper position to maintain that neutral alignment. So make sure that that's there and that you place it under. Insert an oropharyngeal, nasopharyngeal airway, your choice. And then, as the examiner informs you, there's no gag reflex if you insert the oropharyngeal airway, begin to ventilate this patient. You want to ventilate at the rate of 12 to 20 breaths per minute. That's once every 3 to 5 seconds. And you will need to verbalize that that's what you're doing. If you don't say it, they will ask you, how fast are you going to ventilate this patient? If you are ventilating at the proper rate but tell them the wrong number, then you're in trouble. So be aware of that. And that's where I made a mistake in the past. Actually, the skill sheet had changed. So, that's why Annie checked in with me. The examiner will now inform you you're bagging on room air. You can hook the oxygen up before this, and if you do that, it's not a fail point. But remember, you need to begin bagging this patient within 30 seconds of starting the skill station. And you cannot stop bagging this patient, ventilating this patient, for longer than 30 seconds at any point. So be aware that you do have a little bit of time constraint. If you have not hooked oxygen up to your vag valve mask, you'll be informed that the patient's pulse ox is at 85%. You'll hook up oxygen. You'll inform the person, the preceptor at the station, that that you're setting it to at least 15 liters per minute and that you're continuing to bag the patient at the rate of 12 to 20 breaths per minute. The examiner will then tell you medical control is called in and you've been instructed to go ahead and intubate this patient. At this point, you're going to direct them or your invisible assistant to continue bagging the patient. In many cases, the preceptor may take over and continue bagging that patient for you while you gather your equipment. And this is where you're going to go back and put that pre-selected laryngoscope blade back together into the laryngoscope, where you're going to go ahead and assemble all of your tools that you need to go ahead and intubate, including your ET tube, stylet, if you're using a stylet with this ET tube, and all the other things you need, including a colorimetric device, stethoscope, while this person's bagging the patient. Direct them to pre-oxygenate the patient. This means they want to, kind of overventilate a little bit. And I always just say, just ventilate them at 20 breaths per minute, which is the high end of normal. They don't need to have much more than that, and that should be fine. Go ahead and gather, check your equipment, and then when you're ready to go, instruct the assistant to stop the bag valve mask. They will remove the oropharyngeal and nasopharyngeal airway, and you will go in and make sure the patient's in the neutral or sniffing position. Carefully insert your blade. Remember to sweep that tongue to the side, and then lift the jaw, the mandible, up, inserting that ET tube carefully between the vocal cords as you visualize them, and note the proper depth and direct ventilation again by your assistant. This should all be done in less than 30 seconds. You want to confirm that the tube is properly placed, and this will be the next part of the step. So you've already confirmed the tube is at the proper depth according to the size of the tube. You're going to now auscultate the patient bilaterally over each lung field and over the epigastrium. And you would advise your instructor, the preceptor, I do hear breath sounds bilaterally. I am looking to not hear breath sounds over the epigastrium. So that would be how you auscultate, and you would verbalize that you're going to do that or show them how you would do that. You want to have absence of sound over the epigastrium. You may also indicate that other devices may be used, including a colorimetric device, a waveform capnography or capnometry, Chest rise and fall equal bilaterally should also be monitored, although these should be used in tandem with other things. But all of these are indications of whether or not your tube's in place correctly. You've now completed the skill station. Critical fail points to keep in mind. And these are fail points that if you make this mistake, it's an automatic fail, even if it was a momentary oversight. So keep these in mind. They're easy to fix. So if this is the reason you failed the skill station, it's an easy fix. You go and do it correctly the next time. Fail to initiate ventilation within 30 seconds of the beginning of the station. So they advise you what you have, and you go through the process in the beginning, those first few steps before you start bagging the patient. You need to get all those steps done, including the placement of an adjunct, and then bag the patient within 30 seconds. And again, you can hook up oxygen ahead of time, and that's fine too, or you can just wait until you're advised of the pulse ox and then go off room air and start using oxygen. Stopping ventilation for more than 30 seconds, also a fail point. So when you go to intubate, you've got 30 seconds. Get in there, get the intubation done. If you think you're going a little long, don't play around with it. Go ahead and get the assistant back on and ventilate the patient. Fail to take or verbalize BSI precautions, failure to pad the torso for neutral head alignment, failure to provide high flow O2 to the patient appropriately, and failure to ventilate the patient at the appropriate rate, 12 to 20 breaths per minute. Also, failure to adequately ventilate the patients for adequate chest rise. So you're bagging the patient, but you're not watching for chest rise, you're not getting enough air in. Now, this is bag valve mask where you're not connected directly to the trachea. So if your bag mask technique is not good and you fail to ventilate the patient adequately more than two times, and that occurs more than two times each minute, the preceptor can fail you for that. So make sure your bag technique is good. Failure to pre-oxygenate prior to intubating that patient, and failure to intubate successfully within three tries. So, you know, you've got three tries. If you have difficulty getting the visualization of the cords and you're going a little long, maybe your stylet is slipped out of place or you weren't going to use a stylet and now you realize you need one. Either way, go ahead and stop, let them bag the patient again, pre-oxygenate again while you get what you need together, and then go in. You've got three tries to get it done. Leverage the blade against the gums. Again, that's that tilting that blade back and leveraging it against the teeth or gums is a fail point for the adult and the pediatric skill station. Learn good technique. You're going to lift the mandible, lifting using your whole arm. Don't bend your wrist. If you bend your wrist, you're leveraging at that point. So don't bend your wrist. Use your whole arm to lift the mandible. If you fail to assess placement correctly using auscultation, or you insert the oropharyngeal, nasopharyngeal airways improperly, and if you use improper equipment in any way that might harm the patient, then these would all be fail points. So that's the skill station in a nutshell. And I would urge you that if you fail, there's a couple of things you can do. So first of all, it's not the end of the world. I failed a skill station. You want to know which skill station I failed? I failed the dual lumen airway skill station. I will now pause for your laughter. You know, it's like the easiest station in the world, right? Well, you know, I had a mannequin, the tongue was ripped, and I actually jammed the tongue back into the throat. And instead of stopping and saying, bag the patient again, and then advising them that there's a problem with the mannequin, the device is broken, I went ahead and tried to fix it and took longer than the allotted time and was failed right there. So, needless to say, I was a mess, but I didn't really focus on what I was supposed to be doing at the time, and it was my own dumb fault. So it's not the end of the world. You can retest. I did get to be a paramedic, so I passed at some point. You can too. So keep that in mind. Think about what you did. Figure out. Now, the preceptor is not allowed to tell you whether you passed or failed, and your instructor may not know why you passed or failed. So you just need to think about what you did, and maybe it'll occur to you. It may be an aha moment where you knew you failed the minute you did it. Either way, you need to think about that and keep in mind what exactly you did. Review your skill sheets, review your skills, practice again, visualize again, and then reschedule. I can't tell you how annoying it is as a person who helps and instructs EMTs and paramedics that people fail a skill station and don't reschedule to retest as if they will just automatically fail again. Don't do that. You've gone through all this process. You've gone through everything you're doing to go ahead and get good at what you're doing. You've spent all this time in school. Don't just throw it away because of a single bad attempt at intubation or whatever the skill station was. Figure out what you did wrong, get better at it, and go back and retest. It may be taking you a couple. It may take you a little while to schedule that. You may have to drive a ways to get to the other test station where somebody else is testing, but you can do it, and you should do it. And don't give up on yourself that way. Here's some additional resources. There's links in the show notes for these as well to the coordinator documents as well as some great articles on intubation of the pediatric patient. I would urge you to follow up on those and educate yourself. In the meantime, you'll find more videos like this one over at the MedicCast Extra site at MedicCastExtra.com. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to remind everybody that you can find all the links in the show notes for the news items, the additional tip segments and resources, all available in the show notes for this episode. Again, MedicCast.com/blog, and then head over there and click the link at the top of the page for show notes. You'll find the most recent episode listed first, and you can scroll down and find whichever episode it is you're looking for. Do that and make sure that you follow up on these resource links. You know, I can cover things in broad overview here in just 10 or 15 minutes. It's your job to go out there, find those additional resources, look at your own protocols and guidelines, and understand how to apply what I'm talking about to your scope of practice. And so I'll do my job and try to share as much information as possible every week. It'll be your job to make sure that you make sure that information applies directly to you and how to apply it to your patient care scenarios. If you'd like to get back in touch with me, send me an email, podmedic@mac.com. You can also call in on the voicemail line, just like Heath did earlier in this episode, 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC, and share your thoughts with the other MedicCast listeners. And of course, don't forget, put your email address at the end. I'll clip it off, but that way I can get back in touch with you if I need clarification on anything. We will also be looking for you over at the MedicCast fan page, facebook.com/MedicCast, and become a fan of the MedicCast. Head over there, click the like button at the top of the page, and I interact with all of the listeners over there in a lot of different ways than you might find on the website. I ask questions, I put links to different things over there, I look for ideas for future Tip of the Week segments, I share video things I find or produce that might be separate, all of that over at the MedicCast fan page on Facebook. So again, facebook.com/MedicCast. And you can also find me directly on Facebook under the handle PodMedic. If you look up PodMedic or facebook.com/PodMedic, you'll find me there, as well as Twitter.com/PodMedic. That's going to wrap up this show. We'll close out with some PodSafe music from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. This is the song we played earlier in the summer, Alyssa Hendricks with Good Summer Rain. You know, we're in September here, but I thought we would approach this and talk a little bit about our summer recollections, and having a song about good summer rain is a good way to do that. So I will leave you with those thoughts, and of course also remind you, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I'll be back again next week, every Sunday night or Monday morning, ready to provide you your information and tools for your upcoming week as an EMS provider. And in the meantime, don't forget, scene safety, BSI.
Got this old body to keep me on course, and I've got these old songs, and I've got my remorse, and I've chewed off my nails now. I've been dreaming in verse, and all these lyrics I've been writing are so quaintly perverse. But as my watch unwinds, as my table smolders, I will heave these old keys upon my big shoulders, and I'll kiss you goodbye long enough to remind me, and I'll steal out the back door and close it softly behind me. But don't ask me for reasons. Cause I can't explain. There's just something so restless about a good summer rain. And I'm not one to argue, so in all likelihood, but as soon as the rain stops, I'll be leaving for good. I know you'll come looking, you'll follow my trail, and your hair will grow long, your legs will grow frail. When it's finally turned cold again, go home and stay dry. You'll find far more comfort in that inked over sky. But if you leave on the porch light and keep the coffee warm, I'll come walking home someday on a warm thunderstorm, wrapped up in old blankets. No songs and no plans. I will give you my stories, and you will give me your hands. But don't ask me for reasons, as I can't explain. There's just something so restless about a good summer rain. And I'm not one to argue, so in all likelihood, as the rain stops, I'll be leaving for good. You know I'm not one to argue, so in all likelihood, as this rain stops, I'll be leaving.